We are up to the beginning of Perek Zayin, Baruch Hashem, a new Perek, a new beginning. And as I have entitled tonight's shiur, the final call. The curtain has not come down completely, but the curtain has begun. The curtain has begun to lower. So what I'd like to do is to do a few psukim tonight, and then that'll set the stage in Mitzvah Shem for the next shiur. The pasuk begins in the Perek Zayin, which is also the beginning of the Sheni Aliyah, when we're laning Parshas Noach, and we are told the following: "Vayomer Hashem leNoach." Hashem now communicates directly to Noach and tells him, "Bo, Ata, you should come, V'chol Beischa, and all your family, your households, Elateva, come, go into the ark, Ki Oscha Reisi Sadik Lefanei V'Dorazeh, because I have seen that you are the righteous one in this generation." Furthermore, he clarifies his previous command of all of the animals, Hatahora, the pure, or we'll define as kosher animals, perhaps, Tikach Lecha Shiva Shiva. You should take seven pairs, Ish V'Ishto, seven males and seven females. And furthermore, from the animals of Shalot Tahora, which are impure or not kosher, Hishnaim Ish V'Ishto. You should take two, a pair, a male and a female. Furthermore, one second. Gam me'of hashemayim, also from the birds of the heavens, shiva shiva, seven pairs, zachor nekeva, chayos, that they should be able to live, zera al pnei kol haaretz, that they should be able to keep the seed, literally keep the species alive after the flood. Kil yamim od shiva anochi mamtira al haaretz, because says the Hashem, in just 7 days, we're a week away, in just 7 days, I will bring the rain upon the earth. It will last for Arba'im Yom, 40 days, Arba'im Laila, and 40 nights. And in so doing, Umachisi es kol hayakum, I will blot out, I will destroy all of existence, Asher Asisi, which I have previously, I myself have created. I am destroying my own creations, Al Pnei Adama, from the face of the earth. And finally, Yas Noach performed Kechol Asher Tzivahu Hashem. Noach did all that Hashem had commanded him. So what do we have here? We have here, as I say, in a certain sense, a new beginning, or a new stage, I guess perhaps is better to say, a new stage in the story of the destruction, and we see really the beginning of the end. Gene, you had a question?
I have two questions. The first of which is, according to what we learned a long time ago, when it says Tzadik Machlokes, was he a Tzadik?
Yes, at the beginning of the Parsha.
It appears from this Pasuk.
That's right.
Pasuk Aleph, it says, Vador Hazeh.
Good. On the other hand, we also have the fact that Noach did everything that he was told.
That's true.
Yes, fair enough.
But here, Vador Hazeh seems to know the
word. Right, which is parallel to what was the pasuk at the beginning of the parsha, Vidorosa.
Right.
Good. Very good.
And the other question I have is by the Oph Hashemayim, it says Shiva Shiva Zachar Akeva. It doesn't say Tahor or not.
That's right. Good. It's good that you noticed it. That means that you're paying attention and you're reading in a sharp way. I will note, however, just that we're not going to focus on it because the Mefarshim point out a rather innocuous explanation that should just be read in light of the previous pasuk. That when it said seven, it did not mean of all birds, it meant of the birds that are Torah, as opposed to two of the birds. That was maybe the last. That begs the question.
Why
not say it that way? I'm not sure.
Or even in the first part of the pasuk.
The bottom line is, you would like to think, I just don't know the answer, you would like to think there's an explanation for why there is an unparalleled description. That's the bottom line.
It's also repetitious. I mean, we had the
why not put it all
week?
So what's new? Okay, so what's new? This, why is it not repetitious? Because here we have the introduction of Shiva Shiva.
But also it says in the Tahora Shinayim Ishbi.
Right. So apparently what we saw previously was more of an introduction. You know, that there will be. You know, you should know that every species will remain because we'll take one of each. You know, one male, one female, two. However, it's a good point. It's a good point that for some reason this is all unfolds in different stages. Yes,
Harry. I thought it's also interesting. For some reason, the Torah before it said
Good, as opposed
all
to
each. We see each for each.
Yeah, very. And with the birds, it goes back to Zachar and Akeva.
Yeah.
So I didn't put it on the sheet.
I'm Rashi.
But yeah, if I'm not mistaken, the only one who notes that was Rabbeinu Bachai. Just as an interesting thing. It's interesting to all of us. Perhaps, maybe the women will find it even more interesting. I saw that Rabbeinu Bachai pointed out that perhaps the distinction is that Ish v'ishto, which reflects something more personal, and he said that relates to those species which give birth to their children, or to their progeny, as opposed to those which give birth to an egg, which then the baby breaks forth, i.e. birds. Perhaps that is somewhat more removed than Zachar and Nekeva. If I'm not mistaken, I think that was Rabbeinu Bachai's explanation for the shift, why birds are Zachar and Nekeva, and the animals, both kosher and non-kosher, are Ish v'ishto. Okay? But again, I didn't put that on the sheet, but there's enough interesting things I put on the sheet. I couldn't put it all on the sheet. Let's focus our attention just so we can see what things which we do want to investigate. Let me focus your attention to the Shem Hashem, to the names of God. What name is used in our pasuk, in our psukim that we just read? What name is used? Right, the Yud Kei Vav Kei, which designates what? Hashem's compassion, right? What is significant about that?
The whole thing is using Elohim.
Until now, the entire description of the story uses Elohim. Furthermore, if you want to look ahead, don't trust me, but if you'd like, you could trust me, or you could look ahead. The rest of the story, what name is used? We're saying after this, what's used? I think it goes back to Elohim at some point, if I'm not mistaken. No, maybe not.
No, Akashir Tzivoh.
Right.
But then it shifts then later.
Right.
Akashir Tzivoh Hashem.
Right. See, here we have the transition, or at least the first time that Hashem's name is mentioned. And again, after so much time of God's name being mentioned with Elohim, it's striking that Hashem's name of Midas HaRachmim is used. What is the significance or the consequence of that? That's something that I would like to investigate. That's point number one on our agenda this evening. Point number two, which I'd like to investigate, when Hashem talks about Noach's righteousness, so Gene is correct to point out the parallel to the beginning of the Parsha, what was that, Vav Beis, the beginning of the Parsha, where also it mentions the qualifier of Midorosav. Here it refers to Noach being the tzaddik in the Dor Hazeh. However, I will point out, Gene, that doesn't necessarily limit his righteousness. After all, it just makes it vague and open to debate. And the same two interpretations we saw in the beginning of the Parsha, maybe it's relative in that he'd even been greater in the door of Avram, or maybe it's relative he would have been a nobody in the door of Avram. That part is still, it's worth noting the parallelism. I think that's a good point. But what it means is still subject to the same machlokas and same interpretation. However, that is, while Gene is correct to point out, that is similar to what we saw in the beginning. What is new? What word is interjected here that was not then?
Lefanai.
So the question is, right, he's righteous before me. The question is, what is that presumably coming to add? I mean, you know, if I were to tell you that he's a wicked person in front of Hashem, that'd be obvious. And, I mean, who else counts?
Well, conceivably.
Hashem, of course, knows. I mean, who else is talking?
Yeah, well, the implication is that somebody can conceivably be a tzaddik without necessarily acknowledging the fact that Hashem is the Borei Olam, etc. In other words,
are you sure about that?
Well, I'm just saying, well, about whether it's tzaddik.
You I mean, could be a tzaddik without recognizing God.
It's possible to have a person who
but we wouldn't call that person a tzaddik, I don't think.
Well, I don't know, but you could have a righteous person who may be a
I don't think we call that person a tzaddik. Certainly not.
Well, not a tzaddik, well, whatever, but I mean.
Right. No, I thought you were on the right track. You were on the right track.
Would indicate that he.
You just veered left.
Well,
even you, Harry. Even you can do that.
I'm the only one left. But the fun eye would indicate, obviously, there's a relationship, special relationship.
So, what is it adding? What is it adding? Right? It wasn't mentioned before. That's one point. But the second point, more generally, about when Empire Zion is, who else is it? You know, who else is making the evaluation? What, if any, is the significance? That's something that I'd like to consider as well. Furthermore, another point which is new in this pasuk: Ki oscha ra'isi tzaddik lefanai b'dor hazeh. Kliyakar notes, and we'll have to get back to what the Sinai gives of this, the Kliyakar notes that of all of the previous psukim, which we discussed, yes, he's a big tzaddik, yes, he's only a small tzaddik, yes, a capital T, yes, a lowercase t. One second. This is the most direct reference, direct, unambiguous, personal reference to Noach being the tzaddik of the generation. There's something even stronger, more direct, more personal in that compliment. And that we do not have such a strong, direct statement. Right here, it's Noah being talked to with such righteousness. Even the earlier psukim where Noah has mentioned that he merits being saved, I think this is the strongest language, and we'll have to try to understand why all of a sudden now, for Parak Zion, is that some language used towards Noah as opposed to the previous parak?
Well, it might be that because it's in the same pasuk where he said, bring your whole family, you and your male wives and so on, maybe it's because they are Yosef to go on.
Good. There are Mefarshim who make that point, and in so doing, downgrade the righteousness of the family, which, as you recall, is a little bit of an ongoing debate. To what extent were they saved because of Noah? To what extent were they saved in their own merit? Very good, but we will focus on an interesting shot from the Kliyakar when we get to it. A third point, which I'd like to mention now, just to keep your attention in terms of our agenda, when we speak about the different types of animals, and now for the first time, unlike previously, we have this notion of animals which are tahor, those which are not tahor. What does that mean? What does that mean? What do you think it means? It's not your question. This is not the SATs.
The kosher or not.
Good. How is Noah supposed to know what was kosher and what was not kosher? This is tens and tens of prakim and parshas before we learn about the laws of kosher.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Point number four to consider. Now let's put the last point, earlier point about seven and now kosher together. What's the obvious question? Well, before you get to the why seven, which...
Why a different number?
Why more kosher animals than not? Right. What's presumably the reason why we're bringing any animal? As the Pasuk already told us. No, they can't eat meat now.
Okay.
No, that's not the reason.
To
preserve the species. Right. To preserve the species. So if it's enough to bring one of each, why do we all of a sudden need seven of the kosher animals? We're now told in the pasuk. And finally, a final point to consider is both the length of the 40, when we skip to pasuk Dalet for a second. After all, how long did it really rain? How long was the water really actively going?
I think
that's what the pasuk tells us here. What does the pasuk tell us in Parakhes? Pasuk. Bays. In the beginning, I think it gives the other, or the Mepharshim there learn, a longer period of time. Pasuk Gimel. 150 days. 150 days. Parakhes, Pasuk Gimel. Yes, the water was increasing until 150 days. It only started receding. The water was Parakhes 8:3. Parakhes. First Gimel, plus Gimel. The water increases, we're told then, 150 days. It only starts receding on day 151. It doesn't completely dry up to the point that all can leave the ark for a year, but it takes 150 days till it even starts receding. So what is it, 40 days or 150 days? That's like a technicality. And finally, another mention, we've seen a little bit of, I mentioned already now, this idea of a shift in language. We want to know why Hashem, the word Hashem is used, not Elohim. We mentioned that. Or the compliment to Noah about how he's the tzaddik of the door, more personable. Finally, in Pasuk Dalet, there's another term that is used which is worthy of attention, and that is the word Anochi. Hashem says, I will bring, Anochi. What other word is commonly, or if not more commonly used to say I? Ani. Why Anochi and not Ani? Good. I'm not sure if I'll have an answer to that, but perhaps something that we'll say we'll mention that. Either way, it's certainly worth worth noting. So let's begin with our first point of interest, which is why all of a sudden the name of Hashem, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, is used and not the previous term that has been used consistently, as you pointed out correctly, the name of Elohim. So the first, as far as I know, the first, although not last, but the first to note that was the Ramban. Take a look at the first source on your sheet. The Ramban says, two layers of interpretation. Ramban says, Hodio Hashem, Hashem now is being used in the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. That is the term, that is the aspect of Hashem's personality that informs Noah of this new stage. Why? Simple, because it's with Hashem's mercy, it's that dimension of Hashem's personality, Hashem's mercy, Hashem's rachamim, that he will be protected and saved, Besbeso and his whole family, and through them, the humanity will be able to reproduce. So, Feshteitzach, it's simple. Until now, we're talking about destruction. Now, we're talking about salvation. So, you shift from Midas Adin to Midas Arachamim. Then, the Ramban adds an interesting idea, which is another dimension, an added layer of meaning to Hashem's rachamim. Ramazlo, Hashem is hinting to him. Ata, now, even at this early stage, before the rain had even come, let alone receded, Pemidas Arachamim, with his own mercy, carbon. Hashem is hinting at the fact that a year from now, when the waters recede, you will bring a carbon. Lahodio also, there should be an L, that's a typo. Carbono, ubiskus carbono, yekayim olam. He's already telling him, I will receive with mercy, I will find favor with mercy, your carbon, and through the carbon, in the schus of the carbon, yekayim olam, that will create the new bris, the new covenant, that the world will no longer be destroyed. The famous carbon that's referred to further on in Perek Tes. Balkane, and that's why Mazkir Bo Shem Yuchad. That's why we use the Yud Kei Vav Kei, name of God now. In general, says Ramban, we're not studying Vayikra, we're studying Bereshit. Says Ramban, we'll take a look in Sefer Vayikra when we talk about Karbonos. Whenever Hashem talks about Karbonos, he uses the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. Yud Hei Vav Hei. Why? Because we achieve and merit God's mercy through our worship of Him through Karbonos. So even now, the rain hasn't even started falling. Yet alone, the water didn't rise. Yet alone, the water didn't recede. Yet alone, Noach didn't come out yet. But already, Hashem is giving, with the little Narachmanas, Hashem is telegraphing him, you should know, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. There will be a Rachmanas at the end. Even though right now, you're going to be mostly seeing my great wrath, Emidas Adin, you should know, it will end with mercy. So either on the front end, the first explanation of the Ramban, which is the more simple understanding, that within the wrath and judgment in the present, there's a sliver of Rachmanis, you're being saved. Or perhaps that is so overwhelmed by the death and destruction in the present that that is not perceived as Rachmanis. But, says the second Pshat of the Ramban, I'm telegraphing, I'm hinting to you a future time that you will bring a carbon and it will be received, it will be accepted with Rachmanos, foretelling a brighter future. Two explanations of the Ramban, both very interesting. I just want to add a fascinating Nitziv, a fascinating commentary of the Nitziv, quoted here in his commentary, the Hamek Dover. I never knew this Nitziv until today, and it's really mechudash. It's really a novel and original insight, as he is very, very wont to do. Says Hamek Dover in the first line, he just makes the notation that until now Elohim was used, now Hashem is used, and he's honest, intellectually honest. He footnotes, I'm not the first person to notice this, he says, Ramban has already addressed that, and he quotes Ramban's comment about Karbonos. But then he adds his own chiddush, because if you accept the comment of the Ramban, this reference of Hashem's mercy has nothing to do with the psukim that we've then read since then. Bring the animals, bring the family, got some mishpacha, go in, right? Rather, it's referring to something that's going to happen a year from now, a karbon. And to use the prakim sequence, not until Perek Tes, we're only in Perek Zion. So in Nitziv says there's something a little bit chaser. Presumably, if all of a sudden now Hashem's mercy name is used, perhaps it's relevant to the psukim that are about to be mentioned. Ramban doesn't give us an explanation for that. Therefore, says in Nitziv, his own chiddush. This is the underlying part, second line. Nirvavashmos, therefore he thinks that rather it's coming to refer to the implication of a chol beisecha, When we say that Noach and his whole household is saved, what did we mean? Not just his wife and children. Which is what I would have thought. Comes along and it's a tremendous chiddush. Tell me if you've ever heard this before. Avadim ubehemosav. It wasn't just the family that was saved. It says the Nitziv, all of Noah's slaves were saved. Not just his slaves. His household animals, not the 2277 of the animal kingdom. Noah had a pet cat. He had a goldfish that he liked. His animals, Shailat Sarchei Beso, not from the animal kingdom. They were part of the Noah's home. They made it a nice, sweet, tender home. But Tashmisho, all the things that Noah needed to function in his own life, that was all saved. And he makes it very clear that it's it. Below the Kiyama Olam, all these things are being saved, not because the world and the species, the animal, and the human species needed it, just because Noah needed it. And then he adds, Behumagia Tova Gedola Mizela Noah. This was a tremendous favor, a tremendous Rachmanus, a chesed that Hashem did just to Noah. Lahokel Avodoso, to make a little bit creature comforts, a little higher quality of life for Noah. Noah, your living quarters, you want a little granite in the kitchen? Nope, we'll give that to you. And you want a, you know, stomach, you'd like a queen size bed? We'll give that to you. And the kids want, you know, the gerbil to make it feel like home? We'll give that to you. All these little creature comforts, lahokel Avodoso, to make it a little bit easier and more nice for Noah. And it's about that, Rachmanus, not just that Noah was being saved. You know, to be saved and have to witness the Holocaust of the whole world, we've seen before, this is the Christ of Rachmanus. That's not so simple. But rather, he said it's something even more subtle, even more subtle. He wanted to give Noah whatever level of creature comforts could be given. Whenever we're talking about whether it's the destruction or the ultimate sustaining of the world, even that is part of Hashem's Midas HaDin, judgment. Because that word Elohim does not just mean Midas HaDin, as we've always previously understood. It also refers to God as the master of the natural world. However, Kan, Meduber al Rachmei Shemayim al Noach. Now we're not talking about the destruction or the maintenance of the world. We're talking about something much more personal, intimate. His Rachmanus, his mercy on Noach. V'hashkachaso ha-pratis l'tovas ha-tzadik. The special hashkacha, the special kindness and concentration or awareness that Hashem showed Noach because of his righteousness. Kein ksiv ayomer Hashem. It's about that point that Hashem was referred to here as Midas HaRachamim. So a tremendous chiddush. First of all, the basic fact that there were these extra, I don't know how many it was, it could be one, it could be ten, I don't know, but these extra personalities that were saved, that's number one. And number two is the broader principle, which I think is so beautiful and subtle, is that within the basic mercy of Hashem living, of Noah living, Hashem went even one step further. Right? He made it a little bit. Again, it still was in a big boat rocking in the waves with the destruction of the world. That much in Hashem was not going to change. But within that great fury, according to the Nitziv, Hashem found a little extra creature comforts and mercy for Noah. Yes, Alan?
He must get this from the phrase v'chol beischa. I mean, the word v'chol is extra probably.
What does he say? What second line? Nir v'shmoz v'chol beischa.
In other words, it's
the b'chol.
He could have said a beischa, and
right,
or beischa could just mean beiso zuisha.
Right, which is what we always assume is wife and kids. The
b'chol adds. I think the b'chol adds all the other.
Yeah, it's a tremendous chiddush, a tremendous chiddush of the nativ.
But Ram, in pasuk Yud Ches just before, I mean, it's very explicit. Who is going in? Akinosias brishi toch.
Exactly, at that point, that's all Noah was, and now Noah's being given and added. Now when the lights get bright and it's actually time to go, Hashem, I guess, maybe had withheld it, but now he reveals it again. I'm not, this is a take it or leave it, that's it. The Pshat and Chumash and the Torah Menashayim is not going to rise or fall, this is it.
And it also goes against the famous Medrash that he had to work himself day and night. I mean, according to this Pshat, he had
we don't have tons, number one. Number two is unless, if I may paraphrase, there was once a situation in which a rav was hired, and his wife had no interest in being a rebbetzin. So they told the shul, listen, I'll take care of him, and he'll take care of you. So I paraphrase that, because that could be what's being referred to here as well. As it could be that Noach was particularly and personally commanded to take care of everybody else. The Avodim were commanded to
take care.
In other words, he had a long day running around after the lions. He came home. Was he have to cook for himself now? No, he was going to put his feet up. And the Avodim came to serve the food. Could be that that's the differentiation. I'm not sure.
Rabbi, is the implication here that Noah's wife, his children, that they themselves did not qualify to be...
Gene mentioned that before. There are some apartments this pasuk who mentioned it. However, I don't remember who. I don't remember off which apostle, but one of the earlier pasukim and one of the apartments earlier in the parsha actually explicitly argued on that and made sure to say, right, one of the first pasukim in the parsha, there was other apartments who said, no, they married it on their own. It seems to be a little bit vague. It's an open question.
In other words, it's conceivable. Had they not been
righteous on their own, they would not have been saved.
Had not been in Noah's family,
they
would have been
right.
Born.
Right? That's correct, absolutely.
Sure.
Yes, okay? Let's move on. Next thing I want to mention is the interesting idea of Lefanai. Right? We asked, you know, of course it was Lefanai Hashem. Who else was he righteous in front of? What was we talking about? Who else counts? But even though maybe it seems obvious, the Rav Shimshon HaPel Hirsch makes a very big deal about it, and whether you need his commentary to explain the pasuk, I don't know, but I think the point he makes is very, very important and profound. Right? Hashem tells, the Torah says that Noach is a righteous person, lefanai, before God, before me. Says Rav Hirsch, some things can appear right in the eyes of men, but not in God's, and the reverse. In other words, who decides who's righteous or not, based on whose determination? Also, the ideals which man attached to words are not always true and right, least of all in times of his general degeneracy. In other words, the words, as he says in the next line, virtue, just, ad rachmanus, ad all sorts of words, those words are part of a vocabulary. They don't all of a sudden disappear. I'll give you a mashal. You don't think they spoke about kindness in Nazi Germany in the 30s and 40s? Of course they spoke about having kindness. Kindness to the stranger. They spoke about all that stuff. But it meant something completely different in that time and place. So says Rav Hirsch, that is a truism. There are certain basic words and vocabulary and concepts which are used in every generation, by every culture. However, what they mean clearly can change from one time to the next. So to say this is a kind, you know, person, well, it depends on what the people in the time and the place mean when they say kind. This is a righteous person. By whose definition? Says Rav Hirsch, especially in light of that, that's what the pasuk is coming to tell us. Even though the words virtue, just, and all the other nice things in life remain in every age, and the meaning applied to those words often varies with the ideas and customs of the time. However, he goes further, even the name God can pass from mouth to mouth and have lost its true meaning, right? In certain secular societies, they may still talk about a God, but what do they mean? Some kind of a higher power, that might mean nature, that might mean global warming, I mean, that could mean lots of things that could be turned into a religion or referred to as God. Therefore, he says, right, lots of different people use God or spiritual terminology to refer to different things. Therefore, he says, Lefanai is by no means superfluous. It's not obvious at all. Tzadik Lefanai, righteous before me, in the sense that I call righteous. Not whether he, and there, and this really, again, I would say, especially this reverse, again, not that other Mepharshim couldn't explain the pasuk differently, but reverse is taking a very strong stand on the righteousness of Noah. Not just this relative, in that generation that meant tzaddik because it meant that. No, based on the absolute and timeless definition of tzaddik, the way I, Hashem, determine it, that's what it means when it says lefanai. By my standards of judgment, he was a tzaddik.
It's a little bit strange, Rabbi, because with all due respect to that version as well. Because had the Torah said, Oscho ro'isi tzaddik, without lefanai, I cannot conceive of anybody saying, oh, Hashem said he's a tzaddik. I mean, in other words,
No, absolutely. No, yes, you could. Rav and Shmuel, the first Rashi and the Parsha, one Darish Latov, one Darish Lignai. They're the Torah attested he's a tzaddik. But some say it didn't mean really a tzaddik, it meant a relative tzaddik.
He was an Oscho Reisi tzaddik. I mean,
I'm prepping. I'm not I prefaced. I'm not selling this as the absolute shot in the pasuk. I'm not selling. What I'm saying is it's a nice inference, and the principle is very important to consider.
We had the same expression by Avram, his halek lefanai. I don't know whether it's...
No, it's not the same. Again, this, I don't want to revisit what we saw in Perek Vav, but the Mefarshim contrast, right? Rashi, contrast, right? Who's walking in front and who's walking in behind? As I once think I once mentioned to you, you know, with an early problem I had in the shul, and the president said to me, "Don't worry, Rabbi, I'm behind you." He said, "That's the problem. The bullets come from the front." So, you know, whether you're going before God or behind, or getting schlepped by God, it's better than being alone, but it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. Yes.
Could it possibly mean like a sort of relationship already?
I think there's no question. That seems to be a leitmotif of all these psukim, is that there's something more intimate and personable taking place. I think that is definitely part of the story, no question. Now, I mentioned also the idea that I wanted to mention from the Kliyakar. Let's take a look here. Ki oska reisi tzadik lefanai bedor hazeh. What is going on here? Again, so the Kliyakar notes that this is something, again, as you just mentioned, Ethel, this is something more intimate, more direct. Hashem was speaking to Noach in very complimentary terms, not in third person, detached. Says the Kliyakar, correct, Mashalo Omer Lo Kain Miyad Kishetziv Lo Asiyasadeva. Hashem never previously spoke to Noach with such unguarded adoration. You know, there was always, you know, some kind of wall. Hashem was always guarding himself, you know, not to get hurt. You know, that's like the boy who's like dancing around, can't say I love you, figures out everything else to say, he's worried about getting hurt. Until now, Hashem has been dancing around, always had a little bit of his guard up. Now, since the Kliyakar Hashem puts all the guard down in the most direct and intimate way, so to speak, tells him how he feels. Why? Why now? What changed? Ironically, Hashem was hoping, I don't have to commit exclusively to Noach, because hopefully, eventually everyone will do tshuva. Noach had a whole year to work, all these years to work on it. But now that it's a week left, and Hashem has made that decision that, you know what, there's no going back, and ain't no one else coming on board. Ironically enough, because of the process of elimination, taka, there's only a one-on-one relationship. It's now more that Hashem had been holding out for, you know, not the other girl, but all the girls, if you will. Right? He had his eyes set on Noah, but he was hoping, you know, why do I have to go home with just one? I'll take them all home. Now he realizes, you know what? You're only taking on one bride. It's only going to be Noah, and by definition, it's more intimate. And now he adds one final point to make it more profound. So this relates to something which we'll see later in the year as well. Shai Mesu Shelach Kayam. Rashi tells us, in Pasuk Dalid, look at Pasuk Dalid, the first Rashi, Pasuk Dalid. Why? What's 7 days? Why Hashem says 7 days until this happens? Elu shivi me evlo shal mitsu shelach hatzadik. 7 days is the 7 days of avelus, 7 days of shiva for mitsu shelach. Who is mitsu shelach? Noach's grandfather, who was, as we saw at the end of Parshas Bereishis, a beit tzadik. Says Rashi, based on a medrash, shechas hakadosh baruch hu al kavodo, ikeves aparanus. Even though they deserved it, Hashem was waiting until he died. He shouldn't have to live through and see this horrible disaster. So once he died, Hashem knew there's no more artificial reasons to wait. It's time to go. We'll wait for the shiva, we'll pay proper respects, and then we'll go. So even then, leave aside all the hopeful tshuva he had, there was still Mr. Shelach. So Noach was still sharing the spotlight. But now even Mr. Shelach is gone. So getting back to the Kliyakar, he says, Eich Yomar Ki Oscha Reisi Tzadik. While Mr. Shelach was alive, how could Hashem say to Noah, you're the one? What do you mean you're the one? Your grandfather's around. You think someone would want to have a compliment like that if by definition it's a backhanded slap at the grandfather? Of course not. But now that Mr. Shelach has left the stage of history, now Noah is Taka, the one that Hashem has that can most intimately and directly give this praise for. Okay? Yes.
Have a question.
Yes.
We know that, I mean, God is all-knowing. And before, when we were told that build the ark and so on and so forth, going to bring rain, God didn't know that Mr. Shelach was going to die within that period, A. And B, he didn't make room for Mr. Shelach, who too was a tzaddik. In other words, it sounds like a surprise to God. Whoops, I got to hold off on the flood.
I think there's 2 points. You're raising 2 points. One is, I think, a general issue, which is the whole idea of he was hoping they'd make do tshuva.
Right.
That's a very good point. But as you know, it's so good that it's part of a much larger puzzle, right? Which is Hashem's foreknowledge. But aside from the foreknowledge issue as it relates to each and every one of us, in Chumash and in Machshava, we often have this representation in these stages, ki'ilu, kavyochel, as it were, Hashem not knowing something. We assume axiomatically that he did, but it's presented to us in that way because it makes it much more real and much more human. In terms of the Mitzvah Shalach, although I don't necessarily think that this was a surprise, I just think that Hashem knew that, you know what, Mitzvah Shalach is from the previous generation. With all due credit and respect to him, it didn't go. So he was going to, not that he was surprised, but he had made the decision he was going to wait until Mitzvah Shalach died.
But why would you argue that he didn't want Mitzvah Shalach to see this work?
I think that is correct.
Yeah, so therefore, but no, you were arguing from the side of the Rebbeinu Shalach, from the side of Mitzvah Shalach. He didn't want him to see the horse.
That, I think that is why he waited. But once he waited, now that he's dead, and he waited to L'chavod Mitzvah Shalach, that's what Rashi said. Right. Yes. But now that's happened, one of the ramifications of that are that there's a more intimate and more explicitly complementary relationship between Hashem and Noach. That's what the Kliyakar is stressing.
He's saying, like, the Chofetz Chaim is Korban in Europe.
Well, it has been noted by more than one person that we have other. I'm trying to remember what the time. I quoted this from somebody. Whatever. Pesach had quoted
this.
In our shir? Yes, I'm sorry. I can't remember where I saw it, but I did see it somewhere that people have noted throughout history in different periods of great destruction that in the immediate years preceding it, great tzaddikim have passed away. There's an example of a few of them who died right before the Holocaust. Of course, you'll beg the question, but why did they die before and then others didn't die during? And I have no interest in those.
It's an interesting contrast to the story of Yonah and Nineveh, Rabbi. Because there, Nineveh was supposed to be destroyed by Hashem. And they did tshuva.
Right.
So there we see it.
That's right.
Hashem knew, you know, but he told he
stated. So even since we know that in advance, even though it's anachronistic, but we know that, that also means that we know that this wasn't a game. Sometimes people give you conditions, whether it be work or whatever, where they're basically setting you up to fail. You know, they're just pretending that you have a chance. So you might have suspected that here too. We know, Nineveh being a perfect example, no, Taka. Hashem gives you a chance. You can earn it. You can earn it. Hashem doesn't mind taking back the destruction if you do the retreat. And they didn't. Okay. So I mentioned this issue. We've had a lot of good and productive conversation, but we only have 15 minutes left, and I want to cover the rest of the material. So just to mention, we had seen already, I questioned you, and again, once we said it, kind of a light bulb went off for all of us. Was pshat? No, I'm okay. Thank you. Was pshat all of a sudden kosher? Not kosher. What do you mean? Who knows about kosher? What's kosher? Who knew about kosher until now? Take a look at Rashi pasuk beis. Tahora, ha'asida lios Torah. That which in the future will be designated liyisrael to the Jewish people, that will be kosher. Lamadna. What do we see from this? Shali made Noach Torah. That somehow. Rashi doesn't make it clear if it was on his own or from Hashem, but that somehow Noach did know in advance things which were yet to be revealed to the world. If you take a look at the Radak, the bottom of the source sheet, he makes it a little bit more explicit or a little clear. He asks the question, how did Noach know what's kosher and not kosher? He went to Yad Vashem, he went to Smicha, he went to the Star K Kosher Seminar. How did Noach know? The website wasn't up yet. Evshar Shakil Omer Lo Simone Tahara. He says, no, Hashem told him. Hashem gave him a little whisper. This is how you'll do it. Kadesh Yasmim Karbon with 6 minutes at table. So that Noach would know which animals could be brought as a carbon, because only kosher animals can be brought as a carbon. It's interesting, even though it doesn't explicitly ask for an answer to this question, but I thought a completely different perspective. So Rashi and Radak are more or less in one camp. Noach learned Torah, Hashem told him secrets, whatever the case may be. The Gemara in Zavachim, I think I may have said this from Rashi last week, but we didn't see the Gemara inside, I don't think, last week. The Gemara in Zavachim very famously discusses this idea of the animals coming. Did Noah get them? Did they come on their own? And there, the Gemara has told us that Noah knew which ones were going to be in and which ones were going to be out, because they came or he brought them. That's a separate issue, but they came in front of the ark. And though there was almost like a magic force shield. If they were supposed to be in the ark accepted them. And if they weren't, like they ran against the thing, it was like an invisible wall, boom. You know, like the thing that they put for the dogs around the yard?
Right.
Right, they couldn't get in. So that's how the Gemara said, that's how Noach knew which one was Tahora, and which was by that which the ark accepted, by definition was Tahora. That which the ark didn't accept, by definition was Tamei. So the Gemara there doesn't talk about our Pasuk in 7:2 or anything like that. However, Rashi there, it's interesting, Rashi interjects our Pasuk. Namely, what does Rashi say there in the parentheses? Osan Shabon Ela Teva Mele and Bahu. Those which actually went into the ark came on their own. Ubahed, and through that, Hikir Osam Shabo Shiva Shiva Yada Shein Tahara. That's how Noach knew which ones were going to be in groups of seven. Shabo Shnaim Shnaim Yada Shein Tamein. So, according to this, it wasn't that Noach studied Torah. It wasn't that Hashem told him the secrets, choose its cut and has split hooves. Rather, just by trial and error. Or by that which got in the ark, that was seven. That which showed up. So, one way, they're just interesting. For whatever it's worth, I think it's almost two very different, you know, understandings of how some did not really know what kosher was and wasn't in those days. Or they just figured out who got in the ark and who didn't get in the ark.
What did they learn in the yeshiva?
Who knows? I don't think they knew about this. I don't think so. Okay, you have to remember, kosher was not a reality to them. They couldn't eat any meat. Kosher meat was not a reality. They couldn't eat any meat. And this is a vegetarian world at this point. Okay, two more points and then we'll be done. Number one. Pasuk referred to the animals coming, and we mentioned last week a machlokes, did Noach go get them, or did they come? So first of all, I thought a very first of all, take a look at Rashi. First of all, I'm sorry. Let's look at Rashi in Pasuk Beis. The next Rashi, Shiva Shiva. So let me ask you a question. We asked it in the beginning this year. Why do you need seven of the kosher animals? Why not two of each? Why do you need seven? Says Rashi. Because not all. Could you imagine you could survive a whole year only to get killed the first day out? I would not want to have been that animal. I would have been. Can you take the other guy? I put up with this stuff in the boat for a year. Now I get killed the first day. But okay, as I gave it, that's how it goes sometimes. So some of those animals are not going to make it past one day after the thing, and therefore, after he killed those that he brought to the ark, he needed to have a little extra left over. That's what Rashi says. So in light of that Rashi, I just thought, first of all, before we see a different approach for a second as to why you needed seven, but Rabbeinu Bachai, if you take a look at the back of your sheet, clearly is working with Rashi, but he adds something very interesting, I think. He says we learn a moral principle from this. Hashem Yisbarach Avarachaman. Hashem is the great, merciful one. V'lo rotzo ligzor shiavo me'atzmam v'tzar karbon liyos neshchatin. The kosher ones were going to be basically playing Russian roulette. They're coming to the ark knowing that their reprieve may only be temporary. So Hashem did not make it. What did the Pasuk say in Pasuk Beis? Mikola behema Torah, tikach loch, you take. So the Rebbe Bechai, you go run around the Amazon and you go run around wherever. You go get the kosher ones. Because it wouldn't have been nice. It would have been chisaron in midos. It wouldn't have been menschlich to tell the animals, which were anyway running into a buzzsaw, you come to the ark where eventually you'll meet your end. Rather, Ela Omar, Tika Lachoshiva, Noach, you go, Shishtad Lacharehen, Beatrachba Mitzvah, you go put the effort and bring them to the Teva, and then eventually you may have to kill some of them. However, those, Shayu Lachio Zara, the others which were just around and just saved to perpetuate the species, it's about those animals that we have a tradition in Chazal that they came on their own to the ark. And that's what the Pasuk said. Yavo Elecha Lachios. Okay? Okay? So Rebbeinu Bachai just points out that we needed, like Rashi, we have seven kosher animals for carbon, and he adds a little knach, a little nuance to that, that that's why those seven, it says, tigach lach, you should bring, it's just a midos, which is if you can ask, if someone's going to have to sacrifice, literally or proverbially, it's better to take the initiative and bring them along, so they've got their arm around the shoulder, if you will, as opposed to expecting them, they should volunteer to be sacrificed. That's a little bit, if they do it, that's wonderful, but we shouldn't expect that. That's a little bit of a musr, so to speak, ethic that Rebbeinu Chai adds based on Rashi's approach. However, if you take a look at the Radak, he questions Rashi. Rashi said the whole reason we need seven is for carbonos, says Radak. Seven and two. Lolas is carbon, but it's not on the table of God. It can't be, read, as Rashi said, that we needed seven just because of the carbonos. After all, him came, dialogue of Papa Smishiva. You'll take a look when we get to it, right? In fact, test how many animals that Hashem did not bring. Did he bring five of every kosher animal? Not at all. He brought one of this, one of that. He could have brought two or three extra, and most of some of the kosher animals. He didn't need to bring seven out of every kosher animal. So why, Taka, do you have to bring so many of all the kosher animals? Ella, my, what's it? Sharotza, Akel, Hashim, and Atahora, Shiva. Why? Kadesh Yochlu Mehem Noach, Banav Abba Machareyem. Because Hashem knew in advance, even though Noach doesn't yet know, that after the flood, the whole, everything is going to change in that you'll now be able to eat meat. We'll now be able to eat carnivores. And therefore, what animals are they going to eat? Are Noach going to eat? Not the treif animals, but the kosher animals. Therefore, in advance, Hashem was already like the ultimate, bean counter. Hashem was already figuring out that he needs extra kosher animals, not just to survive the flood, not even to survive the first day of Karbanos, but long term, since they're going to be the ones that are constantly being eaten, he needs to start off with a bigger quantity. Now you'll ask the question that Gene asked. Well, if that's the case, why seven? Why not six? Why not eight? So says Radak, and Echanami, good question. Certain things we don't have answers to. Ki akel ra b'chachmaso ki shiva tzarech yafsiku. Hashem knows, and his infinite wisdom, the number was seven. We don't necessarily understand. It's a good question. We don't have an answer. We trust that Hashem has his reasons. Okay. Now, finally, two more points. First of all, on a little technical point, let's start with the end, and then we'll just use whatever time we have left to focus on our first, which is more meaningful. The Netziv is the one who brought to my attention the fact that you seem to have a contradiction. Here it says 40, and we're going to see later on in Parakhas 150. What's pshat that the water was rising for 150 days? And here it says 40 days?
Rashi addresses this later.
Which Rashi?
Rashi in Pasuk Hey, Parakhas. Goes through the whole.
What happens each day?
He says, "Harelo kolu arboim shall yuridas kishonim." In other words, it rained for 40 days. Umei alachamishim shall tagboras hamayim. The water rose.
So good.
And that's the
good. Very good. I just want to add, or should I say, in the name of the Netziv, I will add that he, although I think it's complementary to Rashi, which is something slightly different, but it could easily work together. He says that it took 40 days to destroy everything. In other words, the water may have still been rising through natural occurrences for another 110 days, but the destruction was already complete in 40, which works very beautifully, although it's not a redundancy, but it works beautifully, Alan, with that Rashi, namely, while the rain was actually coming down torrentially, that created the destruction. After 40 days, it wasn't needed for any more rain because everything was already destroyed. But as we know, and depending on where you live, if you live on the bottom of any kind of a slope, which I did growing up as a kid, we flooded all the time, right? Even after it stops raining, the water doesn't stop rising right away. It's still going because it didn't absorb. So with this volume of rain, apparently it took another 10 days for it still to rise before it could then start going down.
That's right, and that Rashi, very good.
So let's focus now, just there's a very nice thought by Refershin. This is how we'll end. Again, I think it's a very beautiful, powerful pshat with some good musar and chizuk as well in it. Focusing again on this phrase, Anochi Mamtir. So Refershin notes in a way that only he can, perhaps only second to the Malbim in terms of being so sensitive to philology, you know, for word usage. Refershin says the difference in Tanakh between Anochi And I need, you have to check the videotape, check the original to get all the details. I gave you a summary of this reverse. But suffice it to say, the punchline is as follows. There's a major difference, he says, between Anochi and Ani. Second line. Anochi is always used when the I does not place itself harshly against a person or a being, whereas where it, I guess that should be it, designates a ruling of God in which His love and grace is revealed. So whenever we have a pasuk or a parsha that talks about Anochi, I did something, it doesn't mean something far removed or separate and harsh, imposing. It means something a little more intimate, a little more rachmanis, and from within, unzero, so to speak. We're together.
Yes, I did, Rose.
Again, I'm not here, nor do we have time, and I'm not the right person anyway to do it. You know, you could do a word search on the computer, all the Anochis, to see if it fits into the pattern. And I don't know if it'll all work or not. This is Rav Hirsch's theory. As opposed to, he says, Ani, which designates the person from whom, or distant, a motion of agitation starts, who is, I don't know what, I must have made a typo here, I'm sorry, sends something to somebody, but himself remains afar. In other words, you do something, but you remain somehow removed. You know, you're of, not from. You're not of it. You're somehow separate from it. And therefore, he says, what's the point? If this is right in light of this, Anochi here is infinitely significant. Although you see me now bringing death and destruction over the whole human and animal world, nevertheless, I remain in my love and benevolence, even at that moment, till the same Anochi embraces everything, has only the happiness and well-being of the whole as its purpose. Even, we've seen this before in another vein, and I think we might even rehearse, if I remember from a week or two ago, that even within the destruction, Hashem is doing it, even though after people getting destroyed, they couldn't have seen it, trust me. But Hashem is attesting that He's doing this, even though you know it's not readily apparent, but He's doing it from a perspective of Rachmanus. Of I'm still a part of you, I still care. I'm not just, you know, the Gzar Din who's somehow harsh and imposing. And I think this is very profound, not only for what it says sort of theologically about Hashem, but I personally think that this has, again, when we're aware of it, a very salutary and I would say chizuk effect. And I'll just leave you with the following provocative thought, which could be part of a much larger discussion. When we think about bad things happening, it's easier for you to think about somebody else. And if you can, think about happening to yourself. But we think about bad things happening. So forget about theology, right and wrong, philosophy. What's more comforting? I'm going to give you two possibilities. What's more comforting? The thought that Hashem loves me, Hashem would never do anything like this so bad to me. This must be coming from something else. Not Hashem. Hashem loves me. Hashem is so kind and merciful. Hashem wouldn't do this. It's coming from something. Again, I'm not talking about truth now. What would be more a comforting thought? Or, in the alternative, would it be more comforting to say, it's not that Hashem is somewhere else, but this is, and of course He loves me, this is coming from something else. Rather, no, this is coming from Hashem. Hashem is with me. And even though I don't understand why, but I know this is coming from Hashem, and there must be a reason for it, He's with me. Now, again, I'm not talking about what's true or not. But it's more comforting.
So,
very hard question, right? So I think for most people at the end of the day, if you think about it, the second one is more comforting. To be, why? Because the most difficult thing is to be abandoned. To have Hashem with us, as painful as it is, this I think, this is my own theory, is ultimately comforting. This, just this point I'm mentioning, this goes back to the first term paper I wrote in YU on anything remotely Jewish philosophical. I wrote a piece where I, in a sense, as a foil, Sklagar Soloveitchik's approach to evil, to Tzadik V'Ra'lo, and I started off by contrasting it with the unfortunate bestseller, Why Bad Things Happen to Good People, which is written by a non-Orthodox rabbi, who had horrible tragedies, if I remember correctly, in his own life. So I have only rachmanis from on a personal level. But how did he deal with the tragedy in his life? He came up with the first theory. Hashem is all good. Hashem is all-knowing. But Hashem is not all great. Our definition and conception of God is three-legged. All good, all-powerful, and all-knowing. He just took one away. It's not all-powerful. Hashem is all good. Hashem would only do good things to me. And Hashem even knows about what's happening. But no, what can Hashem do? He's not all-powerful. This is coming from somewhere else. And Hashem can't stop it. Now leave aside the theology of it. For us, that's clear. It's heresy. But what I remember writing about this in my paper, this goes back 15 years ago, it struck me as so shocking because his whole motivation, which again, it was so, again, I have Rachmanis on a personal level, he's writing a book of theology, it was so unimpressive theologically because he was transparent that his motivations were really not theological and philosophical, but and pastoral. What would be more comforting for him or to tell his congregants when they went through their own tsaros? And the whole thing, I couldn't understand. It didn't strike, just didn't sit well with me the whole time. And then I realized why. Because this wouldn't make me comforted at all. This, if it would be me, Chalila, would be make it worse. That somehow there are these other forces out there that we're subject to, and God, as great as he may be, can't help us? Forget the theology of it. It just wouldn't comfort me. So again, not to minimize the pain and suffering that he went through, or any of us sometimes go through, unfortunately. But to me, at the end of the day, and again, we'd rather not suffer, I understand that. But at the end of the day, I think that that latter one is more comforting, and I bring it back to, that is what Rav Hirsch is suggesting here as well. And Hashem is telling them, you should know, it's not from afar. I'm still the same Anochi. It may be harsh, this judgment, but it's in the spirit of Anochi, not Ani. It's not somewhere else. It's from with me and from within. Okay, Yom Hashem, we'll see you next week. Excuse me, I gotta run.